to be in the session with me yesterday. Can you raise your hand? Okay, only not even half of you. So some of what I say for that half will be repeating just this introductory stuff. But then what we're going to do for the bulk of the session today is brand new. So, but just as by way of introduction of me, my name is Susan Ng, and I'm an ordained Lutheran pastor in the ELCA. Did my parish ministry for about 16 years in the Minneapolis area synod. One church in the city and one church in the suburbs over that period of time. And then I did a almost four-year stint as a full-time community organizer. I was still on call from the synod, so it's what we call a specialized call. I was still able to maintain my rostered status in the ELCA because the work I was doing as an organizer was among churches. And specifically, part of my assignment was to bring more ELCA Lutheran churches into the work of community organizing in the Minneapolis and St. Paul area. So I did that for 4 years, or up about 4 years. And then about 4 years ago, I heard that the position I now hold was opening up at the national office in Chicago, the ELCA churchwide office, the director for congregation-based organizing. And it's the person who had started that position about 7.5 years prior to that. I had known him and followed what he was doing with this work and was had always looked at it and said, that would be a job I'd really want. So when it came open, I went for it. Of course, what it meant then was that I needed to move to Chicago, and my husband, Mike, who's here, chose not to do that, so we have a modern marriage, a commuting marriage. We figured at that point, 28 years, we could give it a try. And so it's been an experiment and one that works, but it's not ideal for us. But it is an ideal job for me. I really love this work. So what is community or congregation-based community organizing? I try to describe it, unfortunately, as Mike was pointing out to me last night, there's not an easy one-word thing to say what it is, or even a sentence. But I like to talk about congregation-based community organizing as a two-pronged endeavor. One prong is that these tools that we use are very useful in congregations, in making our congregations vital places for ministry. So that has to do with identifying and equipping and developing leaders and getting a shared sense of what we are about as the church and having a sense of who's around us and what's our relationship to the others besides our own members, and as well getting to know ourselves better than ever, too. So that's one prong. And the other prong, which more people are probably familiar with, is how we are church in the world, public church. And community organizing is on a spectrum, or maybe a circle, of different ways that we can respond to the world. And community organizing isn't about direct services. It's not even usually about community development, where we're trying to help people figure out, you know, how to make their own lives better. It's mostly about what are the systems in any given community that create or perpetuate injustice. So does everyone have access to housing that they can afford? Probably not. Let's look at that. Let's see why that is, and let's see if we can change that at least somewhat. Does everybody have access to the kind of transportation they need to get to work or the grocery store or whatever? If not, let's take a look at that and let's see if we can't assist in making that more equitable. Those are just two examples. Community organizing tends to not be a one-issue approach, but a many-issue approach, depending on what the folks want to work on. And that's real important, too. We in community organizing, we tend not to look out at the world and go, well, what do they need from us? We want to look inside of ourselves and say, what do we feel passionate about? What maybe has been a part of our story that has made us feel less than whole or less than belonging? And how is that continuing to be an issue in our community? Let's address that. That's a whole nother issue about what are our motivations for doing this kind of work. But the main thing to say then is that community organizing is concerned with getting at root causes, of problems and injustices and trying to change those systems for the better. So what I get to do is go around the country wherever there's ELCA congregations, and either by invitation or by just coming in and introducing myself, to teach people about this work and encourage them to get involved in it. My opportunity this week is to just give 1 hour snippets of that work, and not so much to kind of inform you of what's out there, but to work with you on putting some of these tools to work in your own lives, whether it's that one prong of helping your congregation be more vital, or the other prong of being out in the community, or a combination, or maybe just to make you feel like more of who God is calling you to be in the world, giving you some equipment to do that. So today, it's Who You Know is my title, and the way I wrote that is that venturing outside of one's comfort zone, which we talked about yesterday, community organizing can take us out of our comfort zone sometimes, doing that works best when we don't do it by ourselves. So how do we figure out who would want to do that with us? That is, venture outside of a comfort zone of a nice, cozy congregation. There's a foundational tool from the organizing toolbox called the one-to-one relational meeting. And if community organizing didn't use this, it wouldn't be true to itself. And it has implications beyond that work as well. It's a great tool for living as human beings together with other human beings. So that's what we're going to explore today, the one-to-one relational meeting. And it's fine for you to take notes. I don't mind that at all if you want to, but I also am going to give you a handout at the end of this that will somewhat summarize what we've talked about today. So if you'd rather just participate, that's great. So the one-to-one, it's shorthand. I often will just call it the one-to-one, but sometimes also called the relational meeting. So what is that? Well, first I want to talk about relationships. As people of faith, this maybe is a duh, as our kids would say, a duh. But what is the value of building relationships? I'll just put a few of these forward, and often I'd like to draw them out of you. We'll do that a little bit more later this hour, but right now, just to kind of launch us into it, I'll give you my thoughts. The value of building relationships helps us to find things in common with other people. It tends, when we're focusing on building relationships, to build mutual trust, something that is a good thing, kind of rare in our culture. Helps us identify who might be our companions for any given enterprise. Or just who are our companions, who's walking beside us in any given time. But identifying, sort of getting to know. Relationship building contributes to a spirit of community. So when I'm building a relationship with you, even though it may seem like a two-way thing, it's actually affecting a larger whole, especially if that's happening in multiple places among people with something in common, like a congregation. So it contributes to a sense of community. Building relationships gives us a glimpse. Now, this is something that we're going to learn today. Can give us a glimpse of people's restlessness. And what I would say, the God-inspired causes of their restlessness. Being in relationship engenders courage. When I know that I might want to do something that's hard for me to do, if I have relationships and people who have my back, sometimes we say, or are side by side with me, I can be more courageous. And finally, at least in this list, surfaces new ideas for how we might move outside of the status quo and more towards God's intentions for the world. All of those things, I think, are true when we work on building relationships. All of those things can come from that. So that's also why this is a high value, relationship building in the world of community organizing. So how do we do that? It's great to say, well, you should build relationships. Well, we have a tool. So the one-to-one relational meeting, I would say just a fairly basic definition. A natural but uncommon conversation with someone you want to know or know better, you might already know them, about their values, I'll move out of the way in a minute, vision, life, motivations. A natural but uncommon conversation with someone you want to know or know better about their values, vision, life, motivations. I'm going to put a word out here that the community organizing realm has no problem with, but many others do. We sometimes shorthand these words into this word, this phrase, self-interest. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to ask you to suspend judgment on that and go with me on, but all I mean by self-interest is the same thing as here. What are my values and my vision and my, what's my life story and what are my motivations? That makes up my self-interest. What makes me tick, who I am. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on this word, but I just wanted to introduce it because if you go any further into the realm of community organizing, you'll hear that term. And it's not maybe what you think. It's a fairly innocent word. It basically means myself among others. Who am I? In fact, yesterday, was it in a sermon? Yeah, we were hearing about people, persons. I am because you are. I am because we are. That's really kind of what self-interest is about. Who am I among others? And what's my story and what's our common story? And where are we going, separately or together? Okay. And a couple other words I want to highlight here. Natural but uncommon. The one-to-one is intended to be natural. So I'm going to give you some questions that you might use in a one-to-one, but there's no set of questions. It's natural. You'll come to the conversation with some ways of starting it, but you should follow where the person and your curiosity will take you, rather than thinking, oh, I've got to cover a set of questions. Oh, I forgot to get to that question. It's natural because it's more about what's happening right there among you. And yet it's uncommon. And again, maybe this is a duh, but how often do we in our culture get encouraged to sit for 45 minutes and just listen to another person tell us about themselves? How often do we dedicate that kind of time to one another where we're really focused on hearing not just what's on the surface but what's underneath a person's life? That's how I think it's uncommon. There are a number of, so that's a definition. There are a number of what I'd say objectives in a one-to-one, and I'll just list a few of them. The first I've already highlighted quite a bit, but to build a relationship, or in some cases to deepen a relationship, or in some cases to initiate a relationship. It's not going to be done in that 45 minutes, but it's about relationship. Another is to uncover, and they are going to use the word, their self-interest. What makes them tick? Who are they and how did they get to be who they are? And that's going to be, a self-interest isn't just one word. It's a lot of things about what makes us tick. Sometimes, in a one-to-one, the person who I'm conversing with gets some clarity about themselves, him or herself. To clarify things for the one I'm listening to. And, you know, I'm an extrovert mostly. And sometimes, as an extrovert, I don't know what I'm thinking or feeling until I've had a chance to express it. So when someone is willing to spend this kind of time listening and I can tell something, I start to hear myself say things that, begin to make some sense. But until then, it was maybe just a jumble in my mind. Yeah.
Just to clarify in my mind, so are the two people equal, or they have different roles?
They have different roles for the most part. Now, in this session, we're all going to have equal roles because we're all in the training. But generally, when you're doing one-to-ones, I'm going to suggest that this is not something people do naturally anymore. So you, as the one who's getting some coaching on this, are going to usually have the ability to lead the conversation in ways that the one you're listening to won't, because they don't have this prompting. So that's why I kind of talk about the two different people in somewhat different lights. And lastly, at least in my list again, is to perhaps discover a companion for a specific endeavor. And I'm going to underline perhaps, because I tend to be fairly purist when it comes to one-to-ones, that one-to-ones are good in and of themselves, that to build a relationship with you, to contribute to a sense of community, to really listen to you and build some trust between us, that's a value in and of itself. So if I were to flip this list over and say that the reason I'm doing a one-to-one is to find companions for a common endeavor, that begins to feel like a different thing. Not necessarily a bad thing, but it's more transactional. It's more about in fact, I'll probably listen differently if that's what I'm doing, because I'm listening for the thing that I like that we can go and do together. But if I'm more focused on this will come as frosting on the cake. That, oh, gee, I also heard in there, and I probably won't, in that conversation, make mention of that to that person. I'll go back to a later conversation and say, you know, I've been thinking about that conversation we had, and I'd really like to tell you about this opportunity that I'm involved in. But that's actually another training. What do you do when this comes out of a one-to-one? But just to put it out there, sometimes that's what's going to be the fruit of a one-to-one.
Can I just check up?
Yeah, go ahead.
A point of clarification for me. Are you assuming one-on-one, say, within a congregation, or could this be carried to one in one organization, one in another organization that are trying to find common ground?
Yes. This tool can be put to work anywhere, or even in a family situation. But yeah, I will talk a little bit about how this is often used in congregations, but also beyond. Let me just tell a quick story about that. I was on a tour, a European tour with a friend of mine about 10 years ago, a woman that I had reconnected with from high school, and went with her family because they had an extra space. And so it's kind of awkward because I hadn't been with this family for a number of years. And we were on a bus tour, so there were six of us and about 35 other people that I'd never met before. And there were these dynamics going on in this family that I was with that were pretty odd, and I won't go into detail. And I felt very isolated. And afterwards, I thought to myself, why didn't I just do a bunch of one-to-ones on that bus? So at least I would have felt like, you know, I had some interesting things to talk about. But instead, I felt sorry for myself that this family who had invited me was sort of ignoring me and dealing with all these strange issues going on in their family. So that would have been a place to do it. You know, and I wasn't going to meet up with those people from Australia again and go do a common endeavor, probably. Who knows? But I sure would have had a better time on that trip. And I had the tool right there and didn't use it. So I'm going to ask you now, right away, to get into some of this, but I'm going to give you some help with it. So first, don't do this yet, but the first thing you're going to do after I give you some more instructions is to find someone that you don't know in the room. And you can stay in the room and turn your chairs into different corners and that kind of thing, or maybe just a few of you can go out there if you want, but we're not going to have a lot of time, so I don't want you going off into the far reaches. And I'm going to ask you to have a conversation around, I'm going to give you some questions. And now again, I'm already breaking my own rule and giving you some questions, but that's because you're just here, and so I'm not going to expect you to be the advanced students yet. here's the parameters. You're going to have about 16 minutes total. And what I want to have happen is for the first 8 minutes, you're the one who has invited the other person for the conversation. So you're directing the conversation. You're asking the questions. You're mostly listening. And then at 8 minutes, it's tough, but at 8 minutes, you're going to switch roles. And the other person's going to then direct the questions to that person and listen and mostly listen. Okay, so here's your questions, and it's going to be hard if you go out of the room. What do you remember most about your growing up years? So you don't need to give a full biography. Remember this. Remember most about your growing up years. And you might talk a little bit about the best parts and the worst parts and who the people were and where you were, that kind of thing. What do you remember most vividly about your growing up years? Then, bringing it more into the present, to what do you dedicate most of your time and energy now, and why? You're already starting to think about this, right? To what do you dedicate most of your... I'm sorry, and this is kind of hard to read because it's running out of ink. And why? And lastly, let's make sure I get the right one. What's the biggest challenge you've ever had to face that you're willing to take to share? Okay. You got to protect yourself here. I'm not making you do this, making you answer these questions, but I'm putting it out there this way. If you're willing to talk about the biggest challenge you've ever had to face, and how did you cope with it, or how do you still cope with it? So I'll just abbreviate. Biggest challenge ever, or that you're willing to talk about, and how did or do you cope? Okay? So, find someone, and I'm going to give you, it's 11:12 on my clock here, so we're going to have, let me do the math, 11:30. Let's be back in the room here. So, now right away, I'm asking you for some discipline. That is, the discipline comes in two ways at least. One is, in 8 minutes, you're going to switch roles.
Can you announce that time?
Well, I will if you're around here. So, yeah, so I'll do that. And the other discipline is, when you're the listener, you're the listener. The only real thing you're saying is a question. And you might say, oh, I had that same experience. But then turn it back to them. Tell me more about what was like for you. So you don't have to totally go away, like, oh, I'm not a person here, I'm just this automaton. But it's about them for that first 8 minutes. And then after 8 minutes, it's your turn. Okay? So find someone you don't know, get started, and be back in here by 11:30, and I'll tell you when 8 minutes... Okay, folks, here's an announcement. It's been 8 minutes. So if you've not already switched partner in or switched sides, and become the listener instead of the one listened to, now's the time to do that, okay? 8 more minutes. All right, I need your attention for about a minute. So, hopefully, I have a whistle. Hopefully, you're mad at me for stopping you. It's how I practice as a person who always likes to please. That's how I practice, letting people be mad at me. So I'm going to ask you to stay where you are, because here's a test that you're only going to be tested by your presence with that other person. How well were you listening? Because what I'm going to have you do now is, for 4 minutes each, go now, the first person who is doing the listening is going to go back and ask some questions of the person they were listening to that have popped up in your mind that you didn't get to hear enough about. You know what I mean? So somebody said something and then they didn't go into detail, or they said something in passing, but then they told something else. So for example, this may not have happened quite as dramatically for you, but sometimes in a conversation like this, you might ask a question. When was it that you moved to Chicago? Somebody could ask me that. And I might say, it was when I took this new job, and about the same time my mom became ill. And so it was really good that we were all there. And then I might continue to talk about my job. What did I put out there?
Your mom.
My mom became ill. So it's a marker. For me, it's a marker of time in one sense. But it's also something very real for me, something that created some emotion and change in our lives. So I put it out there, kind of unconsciously. But maybe you're curious about it. Maybe, I hope you're curious about it, okay? Now, it may not have been that dramatic in your conversations, but there might have just been something that you became a little more curious about that you heard a little bit of. So now, for 4 minutes, you get to each. 4 minutes each. So you don't have, you might ask a question like, how did that make you feel? You know, whatever the thing is. Why do you suppose that was? You know, we're not doing analysis here. It's not, you know, it's not about problem solving. It's just curiosity, and here's a new piece in it, courage. Courage on your part to go there, assuming that maybe they hope you will, or maybe they don't even know what they hope, but you're courageous enough to go for it. So again, you might have heard a clue, you might not have, you might just be curious. So now the first person who went has 4 minutes to go somewhere with that, and then we'll switch again. So a total of 8 minutes. All right. Let's have you come back so we can look at some things up here. The rest of you can stay, if you like, right there. We don't need to get back into the neat rows. We've got a few more minutes together now. So let's spend just a couple minutes. These things are for a little bit later, so spend just a couple minutes talking to me and each other about what that was like, and here's what I don't want. I don't want to know what you learned. Well, actually, I do. But what I really want to know is, what was the experience like? What did you learn about yourself in doing this? Not what, you know, the mechanics of it, because we're trying to learn a skill here. What was that like? Was it fun? Was it hard? What was hard? What was good? Just some thoughts. Yes?
My first thought was, after getting to know her for this period of time, there's a big age difference between the two of us, but she's someone I would love to have for my friend.
Okay. All right. And what's the basis of that, do you think? Can you put some words to that?
She calls herself an introvert, and I thought, at least she told me a lot. I just enjoy talking with her, and I would like to find out more about things before doing those 4 minutes.
So there's some human interchange there, that some spirit amongst you that's greater than the sum of whatever. I'm trying to make bigger words than it is. The thing about introverts, extroverts, I'm mostly an extrovert, although I have my introvert times. But extroverts and introverts equally like this tool, I've been told. Because introverts are, pardon me if I'm wrong, but tend to not like what I'm doing right now. Like, it's hard for someone who's an introvert to necessarily to give a talk or to be in a party with lots of people. But an introvert likes one other person with them and likes to be drawn out as well. So we're not just one or the other, those kinds of things. Is that fair for introverts, if I said it that way? Okay. What else did you learn about this? Yeah, John.
I think it's fun to ask people questions, realizing that, not on purpose, but several times we're going to touch a point that's a little bit out of their comfort zone, or they haven't thought about for a while. Not a bad thing, it's just, no one's asked me that. You know, it's fun talking about what's it like to be a brand new teacher in college. Mm-hmm. You know, it was interesting to hear mm-hmm. that. So, yeah. Like, I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
And people, we don't talk about that in our lives, because we're told not to talk about all of
it. Or there just isn't time.
Yeah, don't have the time, or what about yourself? Are you proud? That's the dumbest question for anyone to ask. What are you most proud about? Because we're talking about humility. We're not supposed to share, but it's really... I'm really proud of this. Yeah. This is a chance to draw that out of someone else saying, what are you most proud of?
So it could be a real gift.
Sure,
that it's part of that clarity that people get about themselves, but just sort of the opportunity to say something that you wouldn't really think to say. I saw a hand back here.
I think it's a little artificial, you know, because you're in a setting where people are willing to share, and we have you know, a lot of people here that have people skills and you know, enjoy that, you know, interaction with people.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a lot different, you know, when
I'll give you that. And I will also counter it a bit by saying that you'll be surprised how willing people would be if you're willing to go there with them.
Actually, what I was going to get to is, you know, how do you then tackle that part of it?
Well, for me, that's why I tend to be a purist about one-to-ones. I work really hard to give people a sense that I'm really there to build a relationship. Now, if I'm doing this as the director for congregation-based organizing, people also know that that's part of my job and I might be up to something, but that's sort of out there too. I'm not looking for money. I tell people I'm on the hunt for God's people and what God is calling people to do. That may be intimidating, but it's also, you know, inviting. So it's a matter of sort of building that trust and then being true to the model, not at the end of it saying, you know, I really need you to be on the stewardship committee. That's what people are suspicious about in the first place. All right, what else are we hearing? Yes.
I think about myself, I discovered how important really getting close to a person is for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To feel what they're feeling.
Yes, and I want to just build on that for a minute. When I don't dare to ask a question that someone maybe that I'm curious about, I might say to myself, I'm going to protect their privacy.
Yeah.
Whose privacy am I really protecting?
You're judging for them too.
That's right. I'm saying they aren't going to want to talk about this. But generally, if I feel a curiosity, but I feel a little bit afraid to ask, it's probably because there's something inside of me that's being touched, and I'm a little bit afraid for it to come up to the surface. So if someone tears up or someone tells a story that I can relate to, I won't go to that deeper level because I'm on some level thinking, oh, I don't want that to be all dredged up inside of me, or I don't want this to become my responsibility. I think that's partly what you're suggesting. But when we do, we maybe unleash some things that are helpful for our own process, but B, we build some trust that I'm willing to go to some of the hard places with you.
Well, you created an environment in which the trust was assumed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And that's not all, I mean, that's got all kinds of ramifications. We shouldn't always, and culturally that may be problematic, but generally I think that's a positive statement. Okay, what do you want to say? It's some places do ropes courses. In a way, it's sort of like doing that, but it's without the physical activity, right? I mean, a ropes course is in some ways to build common experiences and dependence and trust among a group of people. Great. And I think this is also a way that that can happen.
And for some people, this is just as big of a risk as getting on that line.
Yeah. So we're almost out of time, and so I know there's probably lots more that you'd like to share that you learned about this process. So a couple things. I'm just going to call your attention to some nuts and bolts that we didn't talk about very much. Usually a one-to-one is 30 to 45 minutes long, so this was very short. And besides the fact, as we said before, it's usually about one person doing most of the initiating of the questions and the other one doing most of the talking. So down here I have it's about 70% about them and about 30% about you. It's another thing that's kind of unusual about it. When it's about you, it's either you asking a question or a follow-up question, or maybe saying, oh, my son went to Luther College too, and he really had a great experience. What was it like for your family? In other words, you will share a little bit about yourself in that time. And depending on whether they start asking you questions, then you can share a little bit more about yourself. But really, again, this is a little countercultural. It's about more about them. And you'll be surprised how relational that can be. Relationships aren't built just on what you share verbally, but how you listen and how you ask questions, and what your posture is, and your eye contact, all of that can be very relational. So I might be the one initiating the conversation, but you may feel you know me really well at the end of it because of the way I've behaved. Okay? One-to-one is best. You know, when you have a couple in the room and you're trying to ask one of them and the other one's answering for them. It doesn't always work that way, but these are the ideals, okay? One-to-one is best. Face-to-face is really the way to do it. Don't do it over the phone. Don't do it over email. Set it up in advance. Don't say at coffee time, can I have 30 minutes of your time right now to ask you a bunch of really deep questions? You want to go deep rather than broad, so you don't have to think, oh, I don't know the name of her children. No, that's all right, because maybe you learn something more about another part of their life, and maybe you'll have another chance. And this is the one that I've just recently learned. Think more about the person and less about the stage, the actor rather than the stage. And here's how this sometimes happens. Someone might talk about where they're from, and then you start trying to figure out who do we know in common in Sioux Falls? Might be fascinating, but at the end of the day, you're not going to know much necessarily about them because you're looking at the stage that they are on and trying to figure out who do I know on that stage instead of finding out about the actor, the person. Okay, so that's what that means. And then a few things about what it's not, and we could go into a lot more detail about that, but we won't, just to give you an idea of what it's not. And then here's that crib sheet that I said I'd give to you. Some questions, again, there's lots of cautions in here, lots of qualifiers, but people always ask me, what kind of questions do you want me to ask? So you've got some here, but again, lots of cautions about how not to get stuck in a script, okay? Tomorrow, if you're able to be with us, I think, Judy, am I going to be at that evening time?
Yeah, I think so.
It's not listed this way on the schedules right now, but it will be. I won't be at 10:50, I'll be at 8:30 in the evening. If you'd like to come back and be with me, we'll talk more about, so how do we put this tool and some of its adaptations to work in our congregations and beyond, okay? But I really wanted you to have a chance to try this very good tool, and so do some more of this now, as you're here this week. Do some more. Don't even tell people I'm going to do a one-to-one with them. Just sit down and start asking them some of these questions, okay? So take these, and any that are left, you can just leave on the outside. And thanks for coming.